This is Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast to tell the remarkable story of Corinthians Casuals FC, the English non-league club who are big in Brazil.
My name's John Forrest. I'm a committee member at Corinthian Casuals. I help with the club shop. I help with the catering, and I do some local marketing for the club.
I'm Richard Green. I'm the stadium announcer, and also I'm the assistant match secretary.
Hello, I'm Stuart Tree, and I'm the programme editor, photographer, and social media administrator.
I'm Brian Adamson, officially general manager. A vice president and a groundsman.
The name is Paul. I help out with the reserves and the academy and take photographs when the main man isn't here.
My name's Dan. Basically, I do stewarding. I do the pitch with Brian Adamson. I've stretched players off, fixed things that are broken, all a range of different things, really. And then, obviously, for 90 minutes, support the team behind the goal.
Linda Scott. I do this ballroom here. I do the monthly draw, usually cook sausages and sausage rolls, and I do the cakes, I do the shopping.
Roger Phillips, vice president and gate man.
Brian Phillips, ground manager, vice president, everything.
To a casual observer, the manpower required to host a football match may not be immediately obvious. Perhaps you notice the elderly gentleman manning the gates and selling the programmes. Maybe you get to know the characters pulling your pints or serving up your pie and chips. But you probably missed the fact that the changing rooms had to be cleaned that morning, that the groundsman was cutting the grass on multiple occasions in the week ahead, that prior to kickoff, the team sheets had to be meticulously and carefully completed before being submitted to football's administrative bodies. Or that it might have required an army of volunteers just to ensure that there was a ground for you to visit in the first place. In the world of non-league football, a club's greatest legends or superstars can often be those who have never set foot on the pitch as a player. Whereas a professional club might simply want its fan base to buy tickets and merchandise or tune in on television come match day, the very existence of their non-league counterparts relies instead on their fans doing much more, taking on the tasks and responsibilities that the club can't afford to pay someone else to do. In Broadway to Brazil, we have discussed many ways in which Corinthian Casuals stand apart as a unique entity in English non-league football. Volunteerism, however, isn't one of them. Every volunteer at the club would readily acknowledge that their endeavour is replicated thousands of times, week in, week out, at countless other clubs across the country. But there remain a few characteristics that mark the Casuals apart at their level. There is the fact that the players and coaches, as unpaid, uncontracted amateurs, are essentially volunteers themselves. There's a club history of a century-long nomadic existence before a ground was built by volunteers from the bottom up. And, as my recent matchday experiences shadowing the club's volunteers will testify, there remains a distinctly eccentric Corinthian flavour to the club's present-day volunteers.
Afternoon, Roger. This man's doing some voluntary work for us today.
Oh, hello.
Please, young man.
That's two.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks very much. That's it for Bush.
That's it.
We realise that it's better if a lot of the work can be done voluntarily. Because it's done voluntarily, they can afford to have it done.
I thought, well, if we're going to do cheesy chips, let's just do them better than anybody else. I can't tell you. This is a club secret. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. And don't
fine.
In the 8 years since John Forrest first popped along to King George's Field to watch the Corinthian Casuals, he has become one of its most devout volunteers. Beyond sorting flags, merchandise and matchday chips, John sits on the club's management committee, which is responsible for the day-to-day off-the-pitch management of the club. Even in the summer months, you can often find him painting a stand or tending to a flower bed. And today, he is driving me for an early start at King George's Field, as I'm eager to learn more about life on a match day at the Casuals.
I usually arrive at the ground about noon, 12:30. There's a few little jobs that I sort of have to do. We put the flags up, the flagpoles. I open the club shop. I grate the cheese for the cheesy chips, which is very important to our fans.
Before we get there, John explains a little more about the practicalities of it all. And having just stopped at a pub in nearby Surbiton to pick up some flyers for a local community event, he's also eager to explain the role an amateur club can play in its immediate locality.
It's a very much a communal effort.
Yeah.
So in so much as we all have our roles, obviously,
yeah.
You'll have people who can't be there. So, for example, today, my friend Paul Downs, who does the club shop and as well as being the reserve team secretary, is away.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the shop. There'll be other bits and pieces that he would normally be doing that, you know, that will be shared out among us.
Yeah.
So you get there, you do your bit, you find out what needs doing, whether it's sweeping the terraces or this, that and the other.
Sure.
And everybody chips in. It's lovely. There are about a dozen to 15 of us.
Right.
On any given day. Turnstiles, programme selling, Golden Goal, kitchen and bar staff. The guys will be doing the pitch, the last minute sort of rolling of the pitch or whatever.
Yeah.
And just general, as I said, you know, sweeping and cleaning up, and a couple of stewards.
And we've stopped off at a local pub to pick up flyers for a community festival that's happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
Casuals are very much part of the community, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. And we really want to increase the awareness of the club among the local community, and also just show that an amateur club run by volunteers also has its role to play. You know, we want to be supportive of the community, of the events that go on. Things like the Seething Festival, the Food Festival, the Community Sports Day, these are all run by volunteers. They raise loads of money for charity, and I think in keeping with the profile of the club as supporting sportsmanship, fair play, amateurism, there's kind of a shared ethos there, something between the community spirit and the Corinthian spirit that really merges well. So yeah, I see it as a club very much at the heart of the community, and the more we can do to help, the better.
To refresh your memory, this locality is Tolworth, in the borough of Kingston-upon-Thames, southwest London. You might recall at the start of the series my mission to find out how much locals in the area knew about the club, and as it turned out, it wasn't a lot. Next season, the club celebrates its 30th year at King George's Field, having moved here in 1988. But in the 106 years prior to that, neither Corinthian FC, Casuals FC, nor the club they merged to form had any permanent home to speak of. Just ground shares and temporary accommodation dotted across numerous South London localities. That prolonged nomadic period included stints at some glamorous places, mind you. There was the Oval in Kennington, generally known for hosting England and Surrey cricket matches, but also the venue for the first ever international football match and the first FA Cup final. There was also Queen's Club, better known for hosting one of the most renowned tennis tournaments of the British grass court season. And for a while, before they merged, Corinthian FC and Casuals FC separately rocked up at the old Crystal Palace sports ground, another former cup final venue. In later years, as the club's golden era came to an end, the Corinthian Casuals could be found in more typically non-league surroundings, sharing with the likes of Dulwich Hamlet, Tootingham Mitcham and Molesey FC. Ultimately, though, their groundhopping became unsustainable. When the Isthmian League unveiled new rules in the mid-1980s, ground sharing was suddenly forbidden. The club was thrown out of the entire league system and forced to enter the London Spartan League, which sits outside of the pyramid that connects dreamers like Casuals to the glamours of the highest leagues in the land. An embittered club, now at rock bottom, had renewed motivation to find themselves a home for the first time in their history. So why Tolworth? It all began in February 1988, when club official Ken Nichols received a phone call from a man named Nick Pearson. Pearson represented a small club who, unlike Casuals, remained in the footballing pyramid and had their own home, having taken the lease out on a ground in 1984. But this club, Tolworth FC, had fallen upon hard times.
And they took a lease out on the pitch here, but there was nothing here. There was no clubhouse or anything like that. All it was a football pitch, fairly overgrown, with a running track.
Joe Young was first team manager at Tolworth FC at this time. He explained to me how individuals at these two clubs fostered mutual connections through erstwhile Casuals chairman Jeff Harvey. With Tolworth struggling to service their debt, never mind develop their ground, both clubs found themselves being able to offer something that the other one wanted.
The premise was to obviously develop it. That was our idea. But we didn't have the finance, nor did we have a very big name. Yep. And although we were in this area and we were under the name Tolworth, we weren't particularly well supported here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously there was Kingstonians here and all that sort of stuff. There's more teams here to support. So eventually, you know, having run out of money and not having any means to sort of make any money to upgrade the ground and finish off what we started effectively.
Mm-hmm.
There was a connection between the people who run the club, that was the committee of Tolworth, and they had a connection with Jeff Harvey, who was involved at Corinthian Casuals. Corinthian Casuals didn't have a ground at the time. They were looking for a ground. They approached us, we had a meeting, and we decided that they would come down here. They had a bit more financial backing than we had, and eventually they put money into the club to upgrade the ground, and Tolworth were no more. So they went by the way, and Corinthian Casuals were then there, took over the lease.
Joey and his club's leadership sacrificed Tolworth FC to ensure the continued future of Corinthian Casuals and the continued use of King George's Field as a home of non-league football. But far from walking away, the Tolworthians instantly adopted the Casuals as their own and, as we will learn a little later in the episode, immediately set about working with their new colleagues to develop a plot of grass and an empty shell of a clubhouse into a fully functional sports ground.
This is a bag with a menu, a scarf,
and
some an air horn, of course. All the match day crucials.
And and a new package of hats.
Oh right, lovely.
For the shop.
Lovely.
Afternoon, Roger. This man's doing some voluntary work for us today.
Oh. So
it's just past 12:30 in the afternoon, and John and I have arrived at King George's. What's immediately noticeable is the amount of club business discussed simply on the walk from the front gate to the club shop. For example, passing the longest-serving player in the current squad, club legend Jamie Byatt, who I'm told is here because he likes to occasionally do odd jobs around the ground himself, John hands him a brand new beanie hat fresh from the latest stock.
Jamie,
what, mate?
Got something for you, as promised.
Top man. Cheers,
it just
mate.
Arrived.
With these hats destined for the shelves of the Corinthian Casuals megastore, I wanted to take a look around the club's principal retail outlet.
Right, so here we are in the megastore. Right, just for the benefit of the listener, John, I'm going to do a full circuit of the megastore so they can get a sense of the size. So I'm starting now, and I'm pretty much done with a full circuit of the megastore. I could take about 6 steps in here, but it's incredibly well stocked.
Well, this is a classic non-league shed.
Yes.
You know, there's no there's no dressing it up as anything else. It's a garden shed turned into a megastore. But, yeah, it is pretty well stocked.
I mean, how much of this is you? How much have you brought in? Because you've got a thing for the merchandise, right? You enjoy memorabilia and merchandise and scarves and hats and all
the
stuff.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to that kind of stuff. A couple of years ago, we didn't really have much stock in the shop at all. It was mostly used programmes and bits and pieces. And Paul Downs and I, actually unbeknownst to one another, decided that we needed to do something about that.
Yeah.
I had some scarves made, he had some scarves made, badges, hats, and we've slowly built up the stock. We've bought up the remaining supplies of the club history books from the publisher.
Yeah.
But It's fun. You know, we've got unique colours, we've got a unique identity. You want to celebrate that. You want fans to be able to come here and buy something.
Absolutely.
So, and we have a new delivery of beanie hats, little woolly hats, just arrived today. So I'm thrilled because it's going to be about 3 degrees today.
I think. Oh, absolutely.
We might sell a few.
Yes. And is your responsibility to keep this place open and sell stuff in it?
Yeah, I share the responsibility with Paul.
Yeah,
He's not here today, so it's my job. And I also run the new online shop.
So talk us through these. I think these are old shirts of the old Corinthian FC, is that right, John?
That's correct, yeah. So those are replicas of the old sort of late 1800s, early 1900s Corinthian football club shirt. So it's white cotton, you know, with the plaque. It looks like a rugby shirt, just as jerseys did back then, with the beautiful CFC embroidery on it.
It just screams gentlemanly, doesn't it?
It does. They had an eye for fashion. And back then, some clubs would just have to wear a matching hat, or their shorts or knickerbockers, as they were, they had to be below the knee, would all be different colours. Corinthians made it a point of pride of wearing these smart white tailored shirts with this embroidered badge and these dark shorts, so they must have looked quite swanky.
Absolutely. But you're right, the pink and brown from a merchandising marketing perspective, it's great, isn't it? Because it is so distinctive and unlike any other football team.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, some people look at that and think, pink and brown? You know, it's an unlikely combination, but it's completely unique. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And to celebrate something that is that unusual in football, it's lovely. You can't buy that kind of stuff.
You can't buy that kind of stuff. Hopefully not John's motto for the megastore. Chocolate and pink, by the way, were the colours of pre-merger Casuals FC, supposedly because they were the racing colours of one of their founding members, old Etonian Mr. F. Bickley. The all-white of the former Corinthian FC is now the basis for the club's away kit. Our next stop was pitchside, and on this particularly windy February afternoon, John was getting to grips with the four flags that flutter atop their poles on match days.
Right, shall we get these flags up?
Yeah, let's.
Tell us about the flags then.
Okay, well, we have, as you'll notice, we had some wind damage, so one of our flag poles is gone. So we've sort of removed one from the mix. The idea of the flags is just to link the clubs. I have here, there's a Corinthian Casuals flag,
yeah,
which bears our club crest.
Yeah.
There is a Corinthian flag bearing the famous old interlocked CFC of the Corinthian badge.
Yeah.
A Casuals flag with the chocolate CFC on the pink background that was their badge,
yeah,
before the clubs merged.
Yeah.
And our very good friends and brothers in football, Corinthian Paulista,
of course,
the Brazilian team. So we fly their flag as well because we see this is their spiritual home.
Absolutely, as they do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, while you're doing this flag, why don't you tell us a bit about your first involvement with the club?
I lived overseas for a long time, but when my wife and I relocated to London, I started immediately looking for a team to support. Obviously, there are all these, you know, enormous football clubs in London, but I'd never felt that I'd be able to establish a connection with them. It just wouldn't really mean that much to me. So I thought, if I go somewhere where my support matters, where, you know, there's a club that you can, yeah, perhaps involve yourself with, but that you can care about. When we first came here, I thought, there's something a bit special about this. Mm. My wife insists that it was the hot chocolate. But I'll tell you what I can get. If it meant that she would come back again, that was great. But we enjoyed coming here. And then as we learned more about the history of the club, that was really what did it. I thought, this is quite magical. It's a special place. It's a special group of people. And they wore brown and pink. And there's this unique identity. And I thought, there's something very lovable about this club and the people that are involved with it. And that was it.
It can be incredibly easy to take for granted this infrastructure. Never mind flagpoles and megastores, the core structure of the ground itself would not be here at all without insane levels of dedication from club volunteers. Testament to this insanity, and embedded into the heart of the Corinthian Casuals more so than any others, are the Phillips brothers, Brian and Roger.
Some idiots weeded your flower bed.
Somebody weeded it?
Yes.
Fabulous.
Thank you. On Sunday.
Was that you?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. That's really, really kind of you.
That's Brian Phillips there, being thanked for the unexpected weeding of a flower bed that John attends to, at a time when he wasn't able to do the job himself.
Hello.
Hello, Roger. Two oldies.
Two oldies, yeah. There you go.
Cheers, Roger.
Thanks a lot.
And there's Brian's brother, Roger. It's around half an hour before kickoff, and I'm in the small shack that houses the single Corinthian Casuals turnstile. While shadowing Rog as he diligently carries out his regular duty of manning the gate, I can't help but admire the loud, clunky turnstile itself as the customers start flooding in. A thing of antiquated beauty, I ask if it can be dated.
Hello.
Please, young man.
That's two. Yeah, okay. Thanks very much. That's it, Kaboosh. That's it.
How old is this turnstile?
This turnstile came from the flower show, Chelsea Flower Show, because one of our previous chairmen was the membership secretary and he got these for us for nothing because they were checking them out.
So how old is it? Do you know what year it would have been made?
Well, I think it's a Victorian one because it's...
Jesus.
Yeah. Turnstiles, yes, that's right.
It says Ellison's Patent.
Patent,
push,
yeah, no. I've
push preventive turnstile.
Preventive turnstiles, yeah. No, I've seen the Victorian handbooks with these very turnstiles in them.
Intrigued to find out more about just what it takes to build an entire ground from scratch, Broadway to Brazil's Dominic Bliss caught up with the men themselves.
When I arrive at King George's Field to meet the Phillips brothers, it is a Sunday lunchtime on a non-match day, yet both of them are here working, busily helping to get the place ready for the home game the following weekend. They offer me a mug of tea, check in on a group of men on community service orders who are doing odd jobs around the club, and then invite me into the boardroom where we find a quiet place to talk about their involvement with Corinthian Casuals. Opting to begin at the beginning, Roger takes me back three decades in time.
Brian and I joined this club in 1988 when they moved here to take over what was the ground of Tolworth Football Club. But of course, Tolworth were in the minor leagues at the time and there was an awful lot of work needed doing here so that we could get it up to Isthmian League standard. That's step four, isn't it? But basically, this was an open field.
The project took over their lives, as Roger and Brian became part of a team of volunteers who helped to build a ground at King George's Field that would pass muster at the Isthmian League level they aspired to return to. At times, they were grafting 6 days a week, whether shifting the pitch 10 feet over, putting handrails around its perimeter, laying paving stones for the walkways, completing the construction of the clubhouse and the dressing rooms, or erecting stands and later floodlights. Although professional help was required for some of those projects, for many of those involved it became a labour of love, as Brian explains.
No, well, it was just a running track with nothing here except the building, which hadn't been finished off. So, you know, they had plumbers and what have you to finish that off. We weren't doing that part of the job. But, you know, it was they'd run out of cash after building the shell of the building, but they hadn't finished it off at all inside. So there was a lot of work that was required to finish it off there.
Yeah.
We were more on the outside of the stuff, though.
Roger, why do it? Why get involved? What was your situation?
Well, because this isn't a strictly amateur club, and we realise that any money that's paid into this club will go towards improving the facilities. So it's not money that's disappearing into other people's pockets.
Yeah.
So we didn't mind doing it if we could actually make an impression, make a difference to this club, and because all they required was the materials which they were able to pay for, all the work we did free meant that they could improve the pitches of the ground as a whole.
How did you get involved? Like what was the...
Well, because because well, there was a bloke working down here. Well, he was another one.
He was a program editor.
Program editor, and he wasn't being paid for doing that. But he started the ball rolling by getting the handrails sorted out, getting the materials for the handrail. He's like an idiot. He said, could you come down next weekend and give us a hand?
Doing stuff voluntarily for a club that you weren't previously involved with.
Yeah.
You know, that's great commitment. Yeah. You know, how did it impact on your lives?
Yeah. Well,
became your life.
For a couple of months, exactly. It became our lives, living down here more or less.
But obviously we retired years ago, so we had spare time in that sense.
Yeah,
so
how old were you at the time? Would you have been in...
60? This was 97, so I'd been 51.
Right, and you got involved 9 years earlier than that?
9 years earlier than that, yeah.
Right, so you weren't retired the first time around, presumably?
What do you mean I wasn't retired the first time around? You know, I retired at 36.
Did you really? Yeah. Well, there you go then. You're the perfect man to discover.
No, well, I packed up when I was 40, so... Yeah. Well, we were both working for the Indian Revenue, and heaven forbid, who wants to go and work in for the Indian Revenue longer than I have to?
Yeah, fair enough. So you said you were more or less living down here. How late and how early are we talking?
Well, it was obviously by then in May, April, May, it's daylight, so, you know...
That's right.
About first light to sunset, but easily 12-hour days and things like that.
How does it compare to working for the Inland Revenue?
A lot better. No, well, the point is...
this is constructive work, not just form filling. That's what's depressing about.
But so you get something that you get a lift out of it?
That's right, yeah. No,
obviously, not being paid means that we're not wage slaves,
We realise that, and we realise that it's better if a lot of the work can be done voluntarily. It's done voluntarily, they can afford to have it done.
And at the earlier period, the chairman at the time was spending a lot of time down here. He was running the bar for nothing and running all the functions and things like that for nothing.
The chairman Brian and Roger refer to is Jeff Harvey. We heard earlier how his connections to Tolworth FC first sparked the move, and not a single person involved in the build fails to mention his driving commitment to the project. In any case, the club weren't just successful in finding the right characters to help build King George's Field for free. They were also adept at sourcing construction materials from other clubs, willing to help out a team in need.
It's worth mentioning is that all these stands we built using second-hand materials.
Yeah.
Because that corrugated metal you can see, there used to be the fence going round Dulwich Hamlets ground. You remember the old Champion Hill ground?
Yeah, which corrugated fence is that?
The stand itself.
The back of the main stand.
The whole stand.
The main stand and the roof of the centre section was the cladding, which was around the ground. And the other thing is the black seats are the seats from Plough Lane, Wimbledon's ground.
And
the red
ones.
Seats are from Happens and Waterlooville. Because after a merger, they changed colours, so they're the wrong colour seats, of course.
Excellent.
They weren't blue. We got red seats, and I think they moved over to blue seats or something, so they had to take those out,
How resourceful, though.
Yeah.
Really resourceful.
Yeah, but this is it. We can get these materials for a fraction of the price of something new.
As a result of all this hard work, the Phillips brothers are, unsurprisingly, part of the club's folklore now. Indeed, they are immortalised in the name of the Phillips stand behind the goal of the ground's southerly end. When talking to Yarrick, Jerry Young, the former Tolworth FC manager who became assistant at Casuals when they moved into King George's, vividly remembered the instrumental role Brian and Roger played in building the first home of Corinthian Casuals.
Then the brothers came down. Of course, they gave a whole new sort of a society things because they were so committed to doing anything that needed to be done. You know?
Tell me about the brothers, because we've interviewed them, but it's still a bit of a mystery to us as to how they really got
involved with the club. It's a mystery to me. I don't know where they came. They seem to appear all of a sudden.
They had no previous connection to it, and then poured out their whole lives.
They had a connection, I think, to non-league football. Anyway, for whatever reason, they ended up coming down here. And then, obviously, they built the stand. Did all the concrete, with help from others, of course, as well. I mean, it wasn't a two-man job by any means.
Of course.
Did loads of work in putting the fencing around, the actual wooden fencing around and everything like that up here. Once again, with help from others. But they were just motormen. They just seemed to just, right, what are we going to do? Right, and then they were off and they were doing it. You know, it's just incredible energy they had to do these things. Unbelievable, really. You know.
Current chairman Brian van der Vilt had another way of putting it.
Mad as March hares. They must be, because their life must be Corinthian Casuals Football Club.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody else, their commitment to the club is beyond belief. To do what they do and to put the passion and the desire into it, we couldn't exist without them. And one worries as to what might happen in the future when we haven't got them. God forbid it, but it will happen one day. They're amazing. they're a tribute to this club and they're a tribute to grassroots football in all its parts. It's totally incredible they are.
Constructing a ground is one thing. Maintaining it is something else entirely. Knowing he can often be found at King George's in the summer months, I want to find out from John Forrest what this entailed.
People like me come here, we see the place on match day, and we see it all sort of ready for the fans and for the players and everything. And we see that over the course of the season. What we don't see is what happens over the summer. And you're very much involved in sort of making sure this place, maintaining this place, I guess, over the summer. I mean, what does that involve?
Well, it's the only opportunity you have where there's several weeks or a couple of months without there being any games on. So if there's any major work to be undertaken, obviously that's when you do it. And the weather's better, so if you're painting, it helps when it's dry. Over last summer, we completely repainted the ground, the clubhouse. There was some gardening issues, mm-hmm. a lot of weed beds, mm-hmm. and all of that happens through people taking a day off work or an afternoon or coming up at lunchtime or whatever it is, and chipping in, you know, bringing a paintbrush or a paint pot or whatever else and getting something done.
And that isn't unique to Crinthing Council. This is being replicated at non-league clubs across the country.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Without that kind of commitment from supporters and people spending the time and the energy to come up and make things happen, a lot of clubs just wouldn't be able to function.
Yeah.
There isn't the money to pay staff to do this kind of thing. So our story is not unique in that regard at all. What is unique really at this level is that nobody at all gets paid here.
Yes, so, includes the players.
That includes the players, the coaching staff, absolutely everybody. So everything is done on a voluntary basis.
Perhaps you might think that the players, as the stars of the show, would be insulated from the type of handyman jobs that John and the Phillips brothers do for the club. But in the summer of 1997, when Crinthing Casuals were promoted to the Isthmian League, improvements had to be made to the ground in a very quick time period. The team had been runners-up in their division, but that season's champions were unable to take the step up, and so Casuals needed to prove that they were ready to step in and take the promotion spot. But it required all hands on deck. Even the first team squad were called in to join the work effort at King George's Field, as former players Tony Blunt and Simon Shergold recall.
We came second in the league, but the other team couldn't go up. Ashford couldn't go up. And the first team and reserve squad over the summer holidays built the fencing around the ground.
Yeah.
What, King George's Field?
Yeah. That was all done. There were some people, don't get me wrong, there were some of those people there, old people there, that were there every day. Yeah. But we had 3 weekends, 4 weekends.
Yeah. Painting and things like that.
Painting, yeah. Digging the trench, the drainage trench. Mm. It was all done by the squad.
Getting 4 showerheads, because I think that was part of the...
Yeah.
That was part of the way you could get up, was you had to fulfil the right number of showerheads or something. And so we were like, well, we need to put another one in here and extending the changing rooms a bit.
Yeah. I'd never known anything like it, and everyone bought into it, and it's unbelievable. And once you're there, not many people left who bought into that. That's the secret.
And even though today's first team squad might not be expected to muck in to quite the same extent, there's still very much that ongoing sense of commitment and devotion to their job that doesn't pay, as I discovered when chatting with defender Nathan Daly. What is it? What is your day job?
I'm a tutor. I'm an assessor for apprenticeships.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Yeah, work with young people.
And does it ever clash the work life with the football life? I mean, it's
occasionally, but you just try and give as much notice as possible. Whether it's you can't make training on a day, or if you know you've got like a far away game on a Tuesday, you try and like. Well, with my job anyway, I can schedule it so I can get off early or work from home on that day. So it works out all right.
Casuals, unlike almost any other club, the players are volunteers themselves. Yeah, I mean, do you see yourselves that way? Is it like that?
I think, I don't know, I kind of see it as like, I take it more serious than I do anything else. Like, I'd rather miss work and come and play than work and earn a bit of money, which is a bit crazy. But no, it's just kind of see it as my job kind of thing. It's what I have to do.
Yeah, and I've heard the term sort of family used for the club as a whole, everyone looking in.
It's a proper family club, like from the chairman to the fans to the players and everyone who chips in. Like, we all just try and chip in and try and do the best for the club.
At this stage, it is time to address yet another reason why Corinthian Casuals stand apart from their peers in the Bostic South Division and have other 8th tier clubs casting their eye enviously in the Tolworth direction. The continued careful and considered maintenance of the matchday pitch ensures a delightful playing surface for the Corinthian players, and it's the responsibility of Brian Adamson, now groundsman and general manager, but once the club's first team manager. When I spoke with him, Brian too recollected the helping hand of first team and reserve team players.
Years ago, this pitch, just going back to it, was absolutely in a mess. And what was good, one day, first team went away to play away. I was running the reserves, we had no game. We dug the pitch up during a Saturday when they was away, lifted all the turf, put all drains in, put it all back down, just so that to try and improve it. And we used to have players here in the summer actually working on that pitch, digging it up, putting drains in with us, and to see it, you couldn't believe it. And they were all first team, reserve team players.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You wouldn't find that anywhere else.
Brian has metaphorically and literally laid the groundwork for James Bracken's current success. As first team manager, Brian was the last one to deliver silverware at the club, winning the Surrey Senior Cup back in 2011. He explained to me that it was when he was still manager that he first felt the compulsion to tend to the playing surface.
When I was manager here, and I used to come down here and the pitch hadn't been worked on from one week to the next, it used to drive me mad. And that was when I first picked up the batons and started doing the pitch.
Right.
Because
if you want something done, do it yourself.
Exactly. and the thing was, when you're at a club that is steeped in history like we are, and you've got no money, you've got to find another way of attracting players. So the only way that you could attract players, or I felt, was to give them a good surface to play on. So I started working on the pitch, asking people. I'm not a groundsman. I've got my own garden, and I know how to cut grass and do things like that. But I decided that if we're going to get players here, I've got to have that surface. And I just asked people advice, and people told me, and I went ahead and done it and found it worked. So the second year, I knew that much more. So in the third year, I knew that much more, until you get to the stage where you can win an award for the pitch, you know. But for James now, fantastic manager, you know, he deserves to have a pitch for them players to play on.
So how do you ensure the quality? Is there a sort of secret to it?
There's no secret, it's just hard work and hours that you're prepared to put in on it, and that's as simple as that. I could give you a pitch to do, you would do it one way, I would do it another, and we could both turn up with the same result at the end of the day. But if you decided to run in here and do it in 2 or 3 hours, and I spent 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, you'd see the difference. And that's what it's about, really. It's the hours you can give to it.
It's highly doubtful that many of the current squad would be at the club without this playing surface. Here's forward Gabriel Odonike.
Another thing I've heard players talk about and management talk about, one of the reasons why players want to come here is the pitch.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, man, I've been playing in this league for a couple of years now, and yeah, Corinthian Casuals has always had the best pitch. I remember they always used to win best pitch of the season.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another good reason.
Indeed, there is a very strong possibility that the current management team, who, as we discussed in our last episode, are charting their own incredible course in Corinthian history, would never have agreed to take over the club without it.
The pitch was a major selling point to me individually, because I wanted to play good football. And B, I knew to get good players here, I had to offer them a good surface to play on. You know, there's a lot of pitches that are bogs. You can't play good football on them. And that's not just me being negative. You can't play good football on them. Pep Guardiola wouldn't try to play good football on them. And if we'd had one of them, it would have been a more difficult choice for me to come here. As it was, we've got a fantastic pitch. Obviously, the fellas like Brian that look after it have done a great job over the years. We're pleased with it.
It's a factor of players signing as well.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, we have to offer as many incentives and as many sort of things as we can. Tracksuits, pitch, good training facilities, good coaching. You know, when you sell it as a package, coach to away games, when you sell it as a package of 8 things and go, listen, this is what you do get, it's much more, you know, beneficial for me to get players in that way than, we have a rubbish pitch and we don't really train, and who would want to play, you know? Yeah. So that's what we work on.
Sadly, we only have time to cover but a fraction of the jobs that make matchday happen. But here's a small collection of the rest of the Casuals volunteers to give you a flavour of that Corinthian spirit.
Linda Scott. I've been down here since the first game in August '88.
August '88, that's the year I was born, and the year the Casuals moved to this ground as well,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
So was that the first game at this ground you were here for?
Yes.
And is this what you've always done, the sort of boardroom? The
no, table? I did the kitchen, the bar, parties,
yeah.
Do the food, for funerals. Happy times as well.
Yeah.
Over the years, yeah, and we only had a third of that kitchen, an old cooker, you name it, we had it, old.
Yeah.
Used to bring my own chip pan down.
Wow. But you're still around now. I mean, what still brings you here every week? What do you like about it?
I suppose it's the connection with the Corinthian Casuals. Mm. It's the past, it's the history.
Yeah.
And I believe in them.
I'm Richard Green. I'm the stadium announcer.
King George's, please welcome the teams of Sittingbourne and Corinthian Casuals.
I came in with Thamesmead Town last October as Thamesmead's kit man. Loved what I saw, just fell in love with the place. And then once news broke of Thamesmead moving to Dartford, my interest was diminishing, and I kept finding myself looking at the Casual scores every week.
Right.
One Tuesday night, I fancied having a ponder over, and I've barely missed a game since. We're all in the same thing together. We know from James and the players how committed they are. We can't expect it all of them without putting something in ourselves. We're all part of the same family, we're all part of the same commitment.
And what's your day job, Richard?
I'm a driving instructor.
A driving instructor, yes. Right, okay. Do you ever find that your Casuals commitments clash with your work commitments, or are you able to strike a balance?
My work commitments clash with my Casuals commitments.
Very good. Very well put.
I'm able to fit my pupils around my work. They know that I don't work Saturdays because I'll go football.
Yeah.
End of. They know it's pointless asking for a Saturday lesson.
What would you say brings you here every week? Because it's not money. What is it?
What brings me here? A 50-mile journey around the M25 from Thamesmead. A 100-mile round journey. But I just love it. I love coming over here. I love what I do. And it's where I want to be on Saturday. I could be somewhere just round the corner. I could be sitting indoors watching telly. Mm-hmm. I want to come over here. I want to be part of what's going on around King George's.
Len Jelly is my name, and what they got me down is a golden goal and programme seller, and I help out in the kitchen afterwards, dishing out all the food. I'm not a volunteer, I get 40 grand a year.
Do you? How long have you been involved with the club?
25 years.
What first brought you here?
Jeff Harvey. The ex-chairman.
What sort of jobs have you done over the years? Has it just been selling the programmes?
No. This is a new thing.
This is a new thing for you?
Yeah, I was mainly down here helping in the kitchen with my late wife, making sandwiches and cooking and replacing the light bulbs when they went.
Sure.
Because I was a window cleaner and I was the only one with a big ladder to get up there.
Right, yeah. Good stuff. Right, and you can do me a golden goal while you're here.
Then.
Right, let's see what number I got.
All goes to well.
55. All right, that seems reasonably realistic.
Don't forget the last goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, thank you, Len. Okay. So, John Forrest, as not only an important committee member, one of the club store, put her up on the flags, you're also the creator of the cheeses.
That's correct.
Talk us through the cheeses, please, John.
This is our finely grated four-cheese blend, which Janine expertly puts onto our cheesy chips.
Absolutely.
Which we believe to be the best cheesy chips in the league.
There's even a chant about it.
There is even a chant. We have a rather devoted section of supporters who are really, really keen on their cheesy chips. And and so they sing about it now, but... When they, a couple of them first said, do you do cheesy chips? They were vegetarians. I thought, well, if we're going to do cheesy chips, let's just do them better than anybody else.
Okay, yeah.
So Quattro Formaggi cheesy chips seemed like the obvious solution.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you blend. This is
really? Is it a secret blender? Oh,
this is a club secret.
Okay.
And so we,
much like Brian's recipe for the pitch.
That's right, absolutely. and we challenge our friends throughout the Isthmian League to try and come up with a better blend.
Excellent.
So no, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you, and we don't
want
that.
Fine. Right. Well, that's the challenge has been put out there to the rest of the Isthmian League.
Yeah.
Very much encapsulating this voluntary spirit today is Stuart Tree, the club's print and digital marketing man who we introduced you to in our previous episode. In the days leading up to a game, Stuart takes time from his full-time job to compile the Casuals' award-winning matchday programme, no small feat in itself. Not long before kickoff on the day of my matchday shadowing, Stuart took me up to the boardroom, running me through some of the more administrative tasks that must be completed. While an education for me personally, you'll have to forgive Broadway to Brazil for not going over the finer details of player registration numbers and the general mountain of tedious paperwork that envelops a club like the Casuals on a weekly basis. However, while we were here, club historian Norman Epps produced an item he had recently acquired at auction for a three-figure sum. Something much more exciting, guaranteed to get fellow football non-league nerds like Stuart and myself salivating at the lips. It was an item that, while steeped in near ancient history, actually had a relevance to the immediate future of the Corinthian Casuals.
Lovely. So here we go. Am I right to take it out?
Corinthians v. I think my first game was
versus
Corinthians
South Africans.
V. South Africans. Is that a
always has an unbelievable set of programmes.
Is that a, is that like a touring team of South Africans?
Cup final.
I imagine it would be. Norman will probably be able to.
So this is a programme from 1924.
Wow.
Because I was asking John in the clubhouse, the megastore, whether he knew what the oldest programme he had in there was. And he said, oh, they go back to the 70s. Now, this is more what I was after.
This is proper stuff now. This is, you know, even before the merger, obviously. I believe we only played at Crystal Palace for a couple of seasons as well.
Yeah.
So to find one that has us playing at Crystal Palace is quite...
Look at the way they lay out the teams.
Beautiful. I mean, these programs.
So the Corinthians were playing a 2-3-5.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is pretty common at the time, you know, as a formation, I think.
I think you're absolutely right.
It was basically
inside right and all that, didn't they? And it was all.
Look at that. The Corinthians brackets, white shirts and blue knickers.
Aside from a delightful insight into the sartorial lexicon of interwar Britain, the programme also offered us a unique glimpse into a highly pertinent period of both Corinthian and Casuals history, bearing in mind this is 15 years before the two clubs merged into one.
On the back we've got some club notes, where it's actually got the Casuals.
And they actually talk about the Casuals in the Corinthian programme.
Well, they were both playing there, but if you look
both
at the
playing
front,
at the same
look at the front, yeah.
Oh,
in the front at the top, it's got the Corinthians and the Casuals.
Oh, I see.
Ah, yeah, so here we go, the Corinthian FC and the Casuals.
So
they were both tenants of the ground sharing, essentially.
They were sharing their old... That's the old cup final ground where they played the original cup finals.
See, it's interesting because obviously ground share is a hot topic at the minute, and there does seem to be a bit of a tradition of it in Corinthian history. I guess being nomadic throughout
the following
history.
Season, the Casuals went to Kingstonian.
Right,
1925 it was.
They only played about three seasons here, I think. The gates were so small that they couldn't carry on.
For those who are unfamiliar, ground share is a hot topic around King George's right now because earlier in 2018 the club made a surprised announcement. Next year, in the 18-19 season, Corinthian Casuals will be sharing their ground with the aforementioned Kingstonian FC, the other major non-league side based in the borough of Kingston. Or at least their name suggests they should be. But due to a number of developments involving some bigger fish in their pond, Kingstonian lost the right to play at their former King's Meadow home in the borough, and have this season been playing at Leatherhead FC in Surrey, a not inconsiderable 10 miles or so from Kingston. The club's joint announcement means that Kingstonian will be returning to the borough after a year in exile. As Norman alludes to, this is in some ways the returning of a favour, the old Casuals FC first shared with the K's at their Richmond Road ground back in the 1920s. Now, here in 2018, the club, who were nomads for a century, are now set to become the landlords. I was curious to learn about what the upcoming share meant for all parties. So first I checked in with a devoted Kingstonian fan, Alex Beard, to find out what the move meant for the future tenants.
We are now without a ground completely, and we're down in Leatherhead, which is a nightmare because it's A, far away, and B, on the floodplain of the River Mole. So so many games have been cancelled this year.
Is that right?
The K's clearly helped out Casuals for a couple of decades, albeit quite a while ago now, but you know, the favours the boots on the other foot now. The K's are sadly homeless, and the Casuals have been kind enough to agree to let us share their next season, so we're really looking forward to being back in the borough.
And how important is it to sort of be in the borough for Kingstonian fans, would you say?
Well, I'd say, I mean, possibly Griffin Casuals are the exception to this rule, but I think most football clubs are rooted in the place that they represent. That's the name they have, that's the identity they take, that's the place they get their fans from, that's the community they're involved in. Obviously, Corinthian Casuals are kind of have a different history and they do things a different way, but Kingstonian are a more traditional football club in that way, that we sort of represent the town of Kingston. That's, I mean, what are we if we're not that, basically? I think our identity is here, and in a way, our reason for existence is to be the non-league football club of Kingston. A lot of our fans live in Tolworth. So it was delight when I read that announcement on the website. I was thinking, brilliant, like, things are looking up.
So for Kingstonian, it's perhaps something of a no-brainer. But since moving into King George's in the 1980s, the Corinthian Casuals have grown used to having this space to themselves. After a lifetime of nomadic uncertainty, the Tolworth years, particularly these recent seasons, which have been marked by success on the pitch, have been something of an oasis of stability for the club. But with a traditionally larger non-league neighbour moving onto their turf, some uncertainty about the club's long-term future is starting to creep into the back of a few minds. What will it mean for the club, on and off the pitch, to have to share King George's in its 30th season? Chairman Brian Vandervelt laid out the rationale for the club's decision.
We wish to help out a kindred spirit in Kingstonian, who are a club of considerable tradition and clout, not only our local neighbours but our friends. We wish to help them, but we firmly believe that with the association with them, our future will be even more assured and our finances will be greatly improved.
But while clearly in keeping with the club's community spirit, and with Kingstonian paying rent, the financial benefits are obvious. But there remain concerns over the impact of the ground share on the club's identity, and on the pitch, with two first-team sides playing on it every week bound to take its toll, as Brian Adamson testifies.
Bad news.
Yeah.
Reason being I say that, I don't want you to think that I'm not in favour of ground share. I am in favour of ground share. Yeah. I think it will be the right thing for this football club long term.
Yeah.
Problem we're going to have is at the moment we play on it today. If come Tuesday night the reserves are here, and on Wednesday the academy are due here, I can get both of them games called off. So I'll just go to ring up the secretary and say game's off today. But the league rules are referees must decide whether a game.
Right.
So where I go out there now and it had poured down with rain and the top's all soft and wet and muddy, I'll just ring up and get it called off. I won't be able to do it. They'll play on it next year.
Yeah.
And by Christmas I don't expect to see any grass out there.
Right.
You know, if you go to Leatherhead this year where they are, same problem they've got. Their pitch is wrecked. But that's why at the end of the season I'm going to stop doing the pitch here, because they've got to get in a full-time groundsman. They've got to pay somebody to do it. And with the ground share arrangement, it gives them some finances to pay somebody that can prepare the pitch every single week, every single day. Yeah. You know, he'll be working on it, to try and make it as good as James will like, But it will take an awful lot of bashing.
But that's a bridge to be crossed at a later date. For most people at King George's, next year is far from the forefront of their minds, because this year the Casuals are on the cusp of history. The immediate uncertainty relates to what league they will be playing in next season. Will they be staying where they are in the Bostic South Division, or will they secure a promotion that will see the Corinthian Casuals playing at their highest ever league level, the seventh tier of English football? You may recall that in our first episode, I wandered the Tolworth streets and shops in an attempt to find out what was known about the club that took over from the former Tolworth FC. And in a lot of cases, that wasn't a lot. But the truth is that every Tolworth inhabitant who isn't paying attention to their local team has been missing out. The football has been about as entertaining as anything you'll see for a tenner on the gate, as the team has rushed towards a knife-edge climax. Promotion is a salivating prospect for just about everyone involved. Just listen to forward Jordan Clark.
Wow. I'm not going to lie, words can't explain it right now. I don't even want to get ecstatic, because I'm not going to lie, I need to wait for it. I need to wait for it to tell you.
Yeah, that's
how excited I am. That's how excited I am for the last, I think it's 10 games. I'm excited for Saturday. I'm excited every game. Every game's the cup final to us.
In episode 5 of Broadway to Brazil, we'll be chronicling the critical conclusion of the Casuals campaign. We'll be talking to some of the club's devoted fans.
Realistically, for a club who don't pay their players, we're looking at relegation.
We should be. In a modern day football, we should not be in this league. Yeah.
So what James Bracken has done in the past 3 years, nothing short of magnificent. Nothing short of it.
Players.
Obviously, I've played here a long time. I remember when it was just bloody probably about two people behind the goal, and that was probably
Roger and his kid.
And that was probably Roger and his boy.
And management.
And like I said, that's the biggest change of emotion I've had during a game. And I said this to a couple of people after the game. That's the first time I've not been in control of my reaction or my emotions after the game.
Nothing straightforward at Corinthian Casuals in the last 3 years with James and stuff. Something's always happened towards the end of the season to make it excitable, and this year's no different.
And we'll be covering just what happens come the end of the 2017-18 season. You won't want to miss it. Broadway to Brazil is presented and written by me, Yarick Zabba, with Dominic Bliss. Produced and edited by Brent Davies, with Tony Banks, our frontline reporter in the field. Music is from John Forrest, Chris Kelly is web manager, and Kelly Bliss does our artwork. With huge thanks to everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club, to the Community Brain for use of the Museum of Futures, and Robin Hutchinson, Seething's very own object of antiquated beauty. Broadway to Brazil is a Creative Brain Media production. Find us at broadwaytobrazil.com, where you can also find our Twitter and Facebook. For more Creative Brain output, check out theus100.com.